If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Hello and welcome to episode 93 of Pixel Sift. If you're joining us for the first time, we're a podcast, a West Australian podcast. In fact, Perth locals, you might even go as far to endorse us as. That brings you the best of the Australasian gaming scene, featuring developers from around our area. But we also talk about the topics that are making the news and stuff that we have been seeing around. I'm joined by my co-hosts this week, Sarah and Scott. Thank you for coming on the show.
Hey. Not a problem.
I'm glad you're
Thank
here.
Thank you for having me back again.
We're also going to be joined by Lachlan Juzva. He is the creative lead at Rectangle Studios, which is probably one of the best names for a game development company that I've heard recently. And he's just released a new game called Novaflow. Lachlan, thank you for joining us.
That is... no worries. Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
That's fine.
Lachlan, last time we spoke to you was at PAX Australia in 2017, and we're looking forward to learning about what's changed with your game, which was at that time called Chromalocity, which was very difficult to spell, but you've gone for Novaflow now, which is great. Scott, what else are we checking out today?
Yes. If you've been paying attention to any gaming media over the last week or so, you may have noticed a lot of attention around the idea of unionization of the games industry. The idea that developers and other workers in the games industry are getting a rough deal is nothing new. The idea of crunch or burnout is an unfortunate norm in the games industry, and we've definitely covered that a few times ourselves. That all might be a thing of the past, though, as the industry moves towards, at least begins the conversation of unionization, and that's the topic for today.
And we'll also be bringing you the winners of our Mole Men Must Die competition. That's coming up. But shall we jump in, Scott? Shall
Please.
We jump in,
Let's
Sarah?
Pixel Sieve!
It's not Pixel Sieve. It's Pixel Sift.
Pixel Sieve!
So, as I said, games industry, unionization.
Two topics that I've heard of before.
I know. So we have brought this up before, the idea of crunch and burning out. And it seems to be a bit of a norm, as I said, in the games industry, a bit of an unfortunate norm. But recently, in the last week or so, the industry has come together and started discussions towards rectifying all the negative kind of sides of it. And one of those prominent ideas is the idea of unionization.
What's a union, Scott?
Basically, it's just a collective that represents a specific body, and they kind of have their interests, the workers' interests over the company's interests, basically, making sure the company's considering the people's interests and not exploiting them.
Very well said.
I wasn't ready for that.
You did it.
Summary.
Now, what's a video game, Scott?
Okay. I mean, if you don't know, you're probably in the wrong place.
It's been a...
You didn't answer the question, Scott. Do you know what a video game is?
He's
been doing this for 2 years and he doesn't know.
Too much pressure.
Been hiding it all.
Fogging up over here.
Yeah, the Game Developers GDC, Game Developers Conference, was held sort of this month, around the 19th to 23rd, with events sort of bracketing either side of it. And one of the big discussions was obviously unions, and that... game developers who are working for these big companies should have something to, work together and kind of say that, you know, we do want to have a set of conditions that are, beneficial for us to work in, and that we're not going to be burning ourselves out. And, you know, there's these famous terms that people talk about, like, you know, there's these game development, widows, basically. They talk about, you know, your family life breaks down because when you're in crunch for one of these big studios, you just aren't around at all. So your relationships fall apart.
Yeah, and so, like, that for a serious industry is really just not good enough. The, you know, there's no, you can't sustain that kind of you know, workload.
Yeah.
Or lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lachlan, you're a game developer. What do you think about the unionization of the game development industry?
I mean, it's definitely a step in the right direction because what we have now clearly isn't working. Even as a student dev, like the hours you have to put in are absolutely ridiculous. And like, you're not earning any money at the time either. So it's
like a double blow.
It's really, really difficult situation.
Well, that's yeah? It's not even just for the smaller studios like yourself. I mean, even the bigger kind of employers will have ways to exploit younger people, you know, through internships and through just never paying people what they're worth. And I think that's a bit of an issue. I've got a cool little from the roundtable that happened at GDC last week, which was led by the International Games Development Association's Jen McLean. There's an interesting quote that you liked, Gianni, from Steve Kaplan, who's the union organizer for the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. He basically said, if you're not at the table, you're essentially on the menu.
Right.
And I think that's it resonates, I think, a lot with the industry as a whole.
Yeah, it's interesting because the obviously the IGDA that Jen McLean is part of has representatives from the big companies, but also represents game developers at all levels, and you know, they actually are, I guess, the key lobby group if you think about it in the US sort of sense, that try to push the value of games as an industry and one that makes money and stuff like that. So,
and they're also the ones that are doing surveys amongst the community and creating stats. Like, I remember with the SAG AFTRA strike from 2016, IGDA had a 2015 satisfaction survey with 62% of game developers at that stage indicating their jobs involved crunch, and that crunch is still a problem. So I think, like I said, this has been a long time coming.
Mm. One of the things that kind of came out of this roundtable was that the IGDA's position was kind of, it seemed like they were not super on board with the idea of developers forming a union or a guild like SAG-AFTRA, which is like a creative group guild. So that's one of the things they were talking about. So, and sort of kind of one of the quotes that was pulled out was, you know, to assume that if you suddenly unionize, everything will be great. But I don't think that's a reasonable assumption.
It's pretty interesting if you read or if you start listening to it. There's a pretty couple of good conversations online. But Jen McLean, again, of IGDA, she seems to come across, if you don't listen to it long enough, as then she's almost opposed to unionization. She's all for the discussion, but she seems to be that other side of it. Yeah. They're not anti-union, but just
the devil's advocate, I guess.
Basically, and it's really good that she does that because she makes really interesting points. And just like you said, you know, unionization is not going to fix all of these problems, and especially not going to do it overnight. But what is happening now is a great conversation that's going to move towards developers and people in the gaming community being looked after how they should be.
Lachlan,
bouncing off of that, I found
Go, Sarah.
Please.
I found an interesting article that talked about, it's basically just saying it's a terrible idea, but it doesn't actually talk about why the writer thinks it's a terrible idea. It's from a Canadian website, and obviously we know that the Canadian AAA industry is doing really well. They have a lot of fantastic studios there. But they do mention that there's already a solution to unionization, which is just people making their own companies. Now, what I found really interesting in this article is they used the example of The Long Dark, which was formed by a bunch of industry veterans. Now, the key words there were industry veterans. These are people that work for AAA titles, companies such as Ubisoft Montreal, BioWare, Relic Entertainment. So these are people that have a stack of experience and probably some funds to already live their lives on that were already relatively successful in their previous, you know, games, and they would have had a lot of successful experience. And this article is basically saying, you know, studios like this are great. This is the way forward, is forming your own small studios and working remotely, and this is the solution. But that doesn't really slide for indie or student devs, you know, and I mean, I'd be interested to hear, you know, your opinion, Lachlan, on this, because I feel like this article completely throws those people under the bus because it doesn't really mention them at all. It just talks about, you know, this one studio that's vastly successful, but I feel that's because it was founded by AAA devs originally.
I mean, yeah, 100%. With with no money, you have to crunch, you know. The work ethic is you go until you drop. Because what else is there? Without funding, without anything, it's not going to go anywhere.
Do you also find that if you're offered a position at a studio or something like that, you'd be more inclined to take it because, you know, you've just come out of uni and you haven't got a lot of options around?
Mm. I mean, absolutely. Like, if I had that opportunity, I would be jumping for absolute joy because you have a chance to do what you want to do and get paid for it. Like, currently, I'm at a day job, and I am not getting paid enough at all. Like, it's yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I've just lost my train of thought.
That's fair enough. Well, look, one of the big sort of organizations that kind of came out of GDC that was sort of handing out the sort of fake Nintendo Power magazines was a group called Game Workers Unite. And they're kind of pushing for sort of a standard so that, you know, you don't just have to jump at any opportunity. You can say, all right, well, look, if I'm going to take a placement with Company A, I know that I'm going to get, you know, paid, or I'm going to get X number of hours, or it's going to mean that they train me in something or whatever. Mohini Dutta was one of the organizers of this group, and they said it's because development isn't an easy thing to predict. The bosses ask for unrealistic timelines about how people have to work, sometimes up to or more than 60 hours a week, and that's really unhealthy. They're being compensated by giving a large bonus, but it leads to a lot of worker burnout. In games especially, this kind of unsustainable work-life balance isn't taken seriously enough as something to push back against for the workers. So, yeah, very, very interesting sort of discussion that they're having.
I think it's interesting that it's taken kind of this long for anything, a movement like this to happen within the games industry. It's not like they are new, you know, they've been making video games for a very long time.
Yeah.
And there's heaps of reasons that have been given, you know, like the game industry emerged from the general IT sector, you know, where unions and collectives aren't, I guess, as prevalent as, say, in your labor type industries. Lost my thought.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's more of a white collar sort of job versus a blue collar job, which we would recognize, you know, like your builders and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
a dodgy builder, for example, can injure a worker and then they're disabled for life. So, you know, and being a part of that is a really important thing for a union. But, you know, if you work some long hours, people don't see it as so much of an injury, but, you know, there is real sort of consequences to that. And I think we were talking about this a little bit earlier today, and we're saying that, you know, the games industry, yes, it's about sort of 30 to 40 years old now, you know, sort of started in the 70s or so. But it's now kind of reaching that point where people are starting to go, well, look, you know,
it's maturing.
Yeah. We need that sort of flexibility. We want to have, the ability to see our family.
Yeah.
And we understand that it's hard and you have to work really.
And to earn a decent salary and not have to pick up your life and move it all the time.
Yeah.
And like, look, like I said, this isn't going to fix all the problems, and it might not happen for a little while, although the Gamer Workers Unite do think that they'll see at least one company unionize in the next few months, although that might be a bit too optimistic. So, yeah, I mean, with all the naysayers and whatever, I feel like this is going to happen. The logistics of it, who knows, you know, whether it's going to be an industry-wide union or a studio-to-studio union or something like that. But I feel like this is good steps in a fantastic direction.
Yeah, and I think we will see something similar to the creative guilds that they have in the US, like SAG-AFTRA, the one that does represent the voice actors.
Hopefully, we don't have a big strike.
Sometimes you need to have a strike.
True.
You know?
That's the power of the strike.
You know? So, interestingly, in Australia, you know, we have the MEAA, which does cover creative artists and people who make stuff. Whether or not their purview kind of extends out to games, or whether it would be like the Australian IT workers or the United Voice or something that would cover it. There is some sort of more generic unions that there could be, but you do kind of need people who know what they're talking about in terms of games, so they're not going, oh, 60 hours or whatever, and not realizing the nuts and bolts of actually making a game. So having these specialized ones could be very interesting. I think it's probably a bit of a heavy topic. It's probably not the most exciting exciting one to be chatting about. We're not talking about loot boxes or something this week, but you know,
no, but it's important for the future of the industry.
Yeah.
If we want to keep enjoying our games, then we need to understand that the workers within it need the rights of every other worker in the world out there.
Yeah, and all you're doing is just evening it out so that if there's a bad actor, you're not in a bad position. So
that's it.
There we go. All right, shall we jump into our next topic?
Let's do it.
Visit us on pixelsift.com.au.
If you're just joining us, we are joined this week by Lachlan from Rectangle Studios. Lachlan, we met you at PAX and you were spruiking a game, Chromalocity. It's now called Novaflow, but if people haven't had a chance to see it, what is the game like and how does it play?
So, Novaflow, first-person action platformer. You use your powers, blue, red, and yellow. Blue makes you go fast, red makes you bounce, yellow makes you stick to walls. Basically, it's a mesh between Portal 2 liquid physics and Mirror's Edge, and that's it. Super, super simple, super easy to pick up and play, and it's super great.
Where did the idea come from? You know, you mentioned those two games there, but how did it all come about?
So, we were originally a Swinburne student team, and basically it was just the brainstorming at the start and the desire to make a game that will look good at PAX, because there were some ideas, like there were some really, really terrible ideas, like a teddy bear horror game that was all from the isometric point of view where you threw stuffing at monsters. That was not gonna happen.
I take it that wasn't your idea. Pitched that one in.
No, that was not mine. No, and basically we had one good idea of matching colors to make, you know, those colors do things, and we're just like, ooh, this could work. And we went from there.
So it did.
So how did you guys go from, how did you guys go from let's match colors to make, you know, to make things happen to the final game and you know, the kind of the Mirror's Edge Portal 2 liquid physics mashup?
So I'm not going to lie, that is a lot of me, because some others at the beginning were like, let's basically make Portal. And I'm like, I'm not sure we can pull that off, to be honest. And really, I thought the only way we were going to get this to happen was to take it in a completely new direction, ramp everything up to be a sort of just reflex-based, intense gameplay that will show at PAX really, really well, get people playing, and sort of from the get-go, that's where I wanted it to go, and I think it came off.
Now, you've been at PAX for the last 2 years with, Novaflow now, yes?
Yes.
So what changed between not only the two packs, but then to now as well?
Now that the game's actually out.
Yeah. It's out now. A couple of weeks.
Yes.
Sorry, I'll let you answer the question.
That's not good. I mean, neither time at PAX was the game called Novaflow. That's something.
Yeah.
But so the first time we were a student team, second time we were out on our own. And now, with like just a couple more months' development, we've completely added an entire environment that was never shown, several dozen levels. Just in the last couple months of development, everything just came together really, really well.
That's great. We do hear that a lot, you know, much with all work, I guess, you know, it really does come together at the end. But it's amazing, I guess, from our side of things, you know, because we saw it at PAX and it seemed so together and smooth and working. It always amazes me that the developer will say, you know, it all came together in the last month or whatever and we hadn't seen it.
Like, this is that crunch we've been talking about.
Yeah,
Scott.
Exactly. It seems done on the outside, but it's so far from.
Now, Lachlan, you kind of, built it from a sort of student team game. What's it like kind of carrying on as a student team and as people need to go get jobs and other bits and pieces? How do you kind of work together as a group and make that all happen?
That's a good question. I'd like to know that myself, to be honest. But, it really just comes down to having a great team dynamic, because, like, the main... What is it? 3-4 of us had worked together on a title just before, in the year before. And so we knew we worked together really well. And basically, we didn't want to let that go. So decided to make it a release.
I was about to ask, how big is the team? Was that originally a 3-4 person team? It still is?
And they all seem to be, the people that we've come across are very encouraging of you, Lachlan. They're all poised and ready for you to stuff up. So go ahead and stuff up their names if you feel like it.
So the very original ones were me, Wig, Muir, Lachlan Muir. And then in the next year, on working on Chromalosity, we had, oh God, here we go. So those guys, Travis, Matt, Ty, Josh, Billy, and Drew. I think that's it. So there was 9 of us.
Big team.
So it was bloody huge. Mm. Like, and that came together not only from the start, but throughout the year as well, because other student teams actually dissolved during that year because of health issues that came from crunch.
Oh, wow.
Which is
very topical.
Funny, yeah, segue into exactly what we were talking about already.
Now, the game is obviously really well geared towards speedrunning it through, and in fact, that's like the main sort of aspect of it. I did want to just register a slight complaint because I'm a bit of a controller player. It is much harder to play with a controller than it is to play with a keyboard and mouse. But I just want to know sort of a little bit about the designing of it and, you know, what do you have to consider when you're actually making that and designing different control schemes?
I mean, yeah, we were stuck on control schemes for a very, very long time. Like, initially, what we had was we were matching the colors to the buttons on an Xbox controller, which you think, yeah, that's fairly obvious. That's a great idea. But obviously, you select the color, then you have to fire the color, and you have to do that every single time for each platform. And oh my God, you're not going to... It was bloody intense. Let me tell you. But, I've just lost myself again.
That's all right.
We've got,
we've got some of your friends on the chat.
Wiggy987 says PC Master Race.
That's an answer.
Well, to be fair, I was actually playing it on my PC with a controller, you know, just doing due diligence on that. So I wanted to make sure that it worked with both. To Wiggy, I say, sort it out, mate.
My name's Gianni, and I like to insult indie devs while they're on the podcast.
And all their friends.
What are they going to do? Group up and, organize better conditions for themselves?
What are they going to do? Unionize against us?
Exactly. Now, Lachlan, the game is extremely fun, and I've been sort of blasting through it and enjoying it there. You mentioned that you had, like, multiple different colors and stuff. When you're kind of building these things, how much did you need to pare it back? And how much do you say, okay, well, it does actually need some more based on feedback you have or maybe taking it to PAX?
Yeah, that's super hard. Like, it was very ambitious at the start and even still is absolutely crazy. But it's all just about cutting down to the core the entire time, sticking to the core vision. Because the more you add, the more issues you're going to have. And so we put in one mechanic, we'd make it work, make sure that it works, make sure it really, really, really works, and then we might move on to the next stage and add something else. Like, it's just about just constant polish.
Something I'm interested in, the name change. I mean, I'm sure there's a valid reason behind it.
Sounds like it's changed a couple of times too.
Yeah. Do tell. Pray tell.
Oh, yeah. So, funny story about the studio name. That was the original name for the game. Ho ho!
Wow.
Terrible name. Name for a game.
Great name for a studio, though. Well played. Way to repurpose.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And then we were stuck creating Chromalosity for months. And we were like, oh, my God, this is it. This is the best name ever. Chroma and velocity. That's amazing. And then basically, as soon as we took it to the public, no one could pronounce it. People could barely say it.
It's a mouthful.
And
it was a mouthful.
Yeah. So.
And no one could spell it.
Went back to the Oh, yeah. No, it's awful to spell.
Caramel like, latte, even our Wiggy reckons.
Exactly. Exactly. even our tutors at university would. Chromel City? Nah.
Damn it.
Like, they've been with us for months and they couldn't say it. So it was sort of a no-brainer, but it it took a while to come up with something that would fit. I think that's about it.
Looks good on the box.
Yeah, it looks good on the box. It's easy to say. People don't get confused. Pick one. They're all great.
Yeah. Exactly.
So the game's been out for
two weeks.
How are you feeling now at this point, now that you've actually released it and it's out into the world?
Seriously relieved, because I can play other games. Like, oh my God, I'm smashing Monster Hunter right now. It's so good. But as for the actual game, I feel like it's being received really well. Like, the people that have played it having a great time. But now it's just the process of getting, you know, more people to play it. And that's the sort of the hardest bit, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Generating an audience.
Yes.
And what's the plan for that? How are you going to be generating the audience? I know you've come on, you know, Western Australia's premier video game podcast.
Which is a good step in the right direction.
Yeah.
I mean, we did actually get some Film Victoria funding, and that has been absolutely brilliant, because that meant we could get a professionally made trailer, for instance. We could get consulting, and rada, rada, rada. But even still, knowing what to spend that money on is bloody difficult, to be real. Mm. And, we're still learning the ropes, and marketing is completely new to all of us, so just got to sort of see how that goes.
So, I mean, now that you're done with Novaflow, I'm sure you might have to jump into it to fix a bug or two at some point, but forgetting about that, what's on the plan for Rectangle Studios as of now?
I mean, around about a month off.
Yeah, some much-needed holiday time.
Yeah, exactly. But after that's up, we're going to come together. We're going to see how keen we are to move on to another project. I got to tell you, I'm keen.
Cool.
Because I want to keep making stuff. I want to move on from Novaflow. Oh, my God. taking it as it comes at the moment.
Does it feel good to, you know, have a project completely squared away now?
It's cathartic.
It's brilliant. Because just you put that on your resume and it's like, look, you can go buy this on Steam. That's the biggest,
it's a real thing.
PC thing. It's amazing. Like, so legit.
And they go to you, sir, this is a interview for Woolworths. Just didn't be able to pack a bag.
Yeah, but you see, I made this with the team. See, I'm a team player.
I can make just a bag. It works.
All these skills are interchangeable.
Exactly. See all these different colored items.
I want to confirm, you can buy it on Steam. I may have just purchased it on Steam.
as we were talking.
Maybe.
Live purchases. Now, coming on Pixel Sift is already paying off, literally.
now, Lachlan, you know, if people want to find out a bit more about the game, where should they go if they want to give it a go? If they want to get onto Steam and purchase it, where should they start first?
I mean, you're probably better off just buying it on Steam, Novaflow on Steam. But Twitter is where we're most active, so we're Rectangle Stew Twitter. And then basically from there you can see our press kit, Facebook, website, our everything. But Twitter is definitely the place to get us.
And we'll be sticking links up to that onto our website as well, where you can find out, trailers, and you can watch a copy of this video as well if you'd like to see that one. Lachlan, it's been really great. We've enjoyed playing your game over the last couple of days, and we enjoyed playing at PAX. It was really fun to give it a crack. And I remember when we went to go see it at PAX, we were sitting there failing terribly, and you had one of your mates there who was actually just smashing at it, and like, we were just like, what the? This guy looks like he just walked up and is like destroying the game. And you're like, nah, it's one of our mates.
He's been here all weekend.
hasn't left.
He's trying to make it look busy.
No, he really has.
It was, though.
So you can pick that up. That's pretty much all we've got time for tonight. So, Lachlan, thank you very much for joining us. We hope that your dinner was good. That you've had a sweet souvlaki before the show. This is a peer back behind the curtain.
Yeah,
this is the things we talk about just before the show goes
break
live.
Down so that wall.
There we go. You can find all the links
to much talking.
Yeah, you can find all the links to Novaflow and Rectangle on Twitter and Lachlan as well. I don't know. Did he do an all right job? It was said that he was going to stuff up quite a bit. We can, interested to hear what you have to say.
I'm interested to hear what the chat has to say.
Yeah, whether or not he pulled that off or not. You've got a few minutes.
Wiggy is a harsh critic.
No, not taking you down. Our website, if you want to find the links, is pixelsift.com.au. Now, Scott.
Yes.
If people want to find our website by going through a social media network and they haven't deleted them all by now, where should they go to?
You can go to facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift, twitch.tv/pixelsift, and youtube.com/pixelsiftau.
And Sarah, if people want to go watch or listen to our other episodes, where should they go to?
You can go to our website to stream all episodes. You can subscribe as a podcast on either iTunes or Pocket Cast or using the RSS link on our page. And if you're listening to us exclusively on one of these platforms, I just want to remind you that next time we go live every fortnight, but next time our next episode will be on the 13th of April.
Hey, we have an announcement.
We do have an announcement.
Well, before we rush off.
We've got some winners for our competition. Mokomoto, very kindly donated us some keys to give away in the game that we played last week, which is called Molmen Must Die.
Yep.
Very fun game. And the winners of our competition, thank you everyone who entered. There was over 200 entries for the competition. Andrew L., Ben S., and Charles S. So you've won a Steam key for the game. So congratulations for that. We'll send you an email.
We'll be in contact shortly.
Yeah, give it a crack. That's all pretty much we've got time for. Thank you very much for joining us. Lachlan, he's lost his final word from Wiggy. He says, think twice. Maybe he lost his train of thought.
Yeah, maybe just twice.
Maybe just twice.
It's fine.
So there we go. Lachlan, it's been a pleasure. We're looking forward to jumping back into Novaflow and giving it another go. And we will catch everyone listening in and tuning in on the podcast.
Peace out.
2 weeks' time.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.